you're serious about private label and getting into private label and advancing with private label very, very quickly, here's a great opportunity. And there's only 9 slots left. So it's not like, hey, think about it. This is a pull the trigger if you're in and get in fast. It's Amazing Freedom Private Label Retreat in Breckenridge, Colorado, May 19th. Through the 22nd of 2017. You're responsible for your airfare to get to Denver and your way home. That's what you have to worry about. The rest is taken care of. All transportation, all meals, all housing. Oh, the house? It's a 15,000 square foot home. Yep, 15,000 square foot home. First class meals catered by an executive chef on site. He will make it right there for you. We've got private label 101 to 10001. I mean, it's everything you need. Finding products, bringing products to market. It's one-on-one personal training. It's a handful of people. There's only 9 slots left. Andy Slammons, Nate Slammons, Leron Hirschkorn will be there to help you be successful. This is not cheap, but it is advanced and it's compressed into a couple days. Here's the other great thing. Andy's going to partner with you on a couple products while you're there. So you have an opportunity to get into the private label game with Andy. If you're interested, there's no time to wait because there's only 9 slots left. AmazingFreedom.com/retreat. AmazingFreedom.com/retreat.
Welcome to the e-commerce momentum podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce momentum podcast. This is episode 178, Brock Sutton. Man, oh man, I love talking with Brock because I get to talk about inventory. And being an accountant, this is exciting stuff for me. And you might be bored to death, but I enjoyed it. I beat this poor guy up about BrickLink more than probably anyone else. And it's because it's just so interesting to me. And he is so knowledgeable and he was so genuine and so giving with his information. I really appreciate that. But what I loved about it is that it's a niche site. And I think there are many niche sites, and I'll refer to a whole bunch of them in the podcast. But, you know, thinking about niche sites, this is BrickLink. This is, and he mentions BrickOwl, which is a second site, and I'm sure there are a few others. They're specific to Lego. But I know of many record LP sites that are out there. They've been out there forever, and they're still going strong. I think of Posh and some of the other high-end clothing sites. What my point is that these niche sites exist, and it allows you to sell on different marketplaces. And I think that's something that lots of people should be exploring. If they don't want to do their own site and merchant fulfill stuff, these other sites might be viable options. And then you can start looking at the recent advent of FedEx fulfillment and other methods like that. So I think this is something worth considering, and beat this poor guy up with tons of questions. Let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the e-commerce momentum podcast. I'm very excited about tonight's guest because I just met him, but I knew the minute he started describing who he's in business, I'm like, I know who your partner is. I know. Brock Sutton. Welcome, Brock.
Hi.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and we'll talk about your partner later. I did get to see him this past week, and I'm happy to do that. He's a great guy. So Brock is a seller. How long have you been selling, Brock?
Well, I started in 2008.
Wow. That's a long time. You're not that old.
Yeah, it's been going well.
Well, what, I mean, you know, is that the first business that you've had? Is this first, because you started in, I don't know, I guess I'm surmising and I shouldn't do that. Let's go back. You're in high school. Where did you have any side hustles, any jobs, any, you know, cut grass or anything like that?
I started in my entrepreneurship at age 8. I collected aluminum cans to make extra money.
That's awesome. Were you going around with the wagon picking them up and that kind of thing?
I actually worked with local businesses and set up cans for them to put their recycling into that I could come pick up.
That's awesome. And so they probably appreciated the fact that you were willing to do the work, not like other kids who didn't want to do the work, right? And so they let you do that?
Exactly.
And so you did, what'd you do with the money?
I think the first thing I bought was a bike.
Okay. Were your parents kind of steering you that way? Like, hey, if you want something, you got to go work for it? Or did you just feel that deep down?
Well, they basically had no money.
Oh, well, that would be, oh, okay. Well, that would help. Okay.
It was a forced situation.
Okay.
So if I wanted anything, I knew I had to go out and work for it.
So they were missionaries. So did you travel as a missionary's kid?
I did for high school, but I was in the United States for my first 15 years.
Okay. Okay. And so that lifestyle, though, is, you know, start and stop, right? That kind of thing, right? And, you know, here and then there. Did that affect your entrepreneurial business, or were you able to get right through that?
Well, I gained a lot of experience traveling overseas and kind of seeing what it's like outside of America, which definitely affected how I thought about money.
Did you try to do any businesses while you were overseas?
I actually did tutoring of other students at my school.
Oh, awesome. So you got paid for that. Again, this is a continuation.
The whole $3 an hour there.
Well, but, you know, here's the point, right, is that if your parents were missionaries, they really weren't making any money. They were. It's a subsistence life, right? I mean, it's basically pay enough to, you know, have you live. So if you wanted anything, you really did have no choice but to earn it.
That's true.
Do you have any siblings?
I do. I'm the oldest of three.
Okay. Are they entrepreneurial in their ways too?
They are not. Neither of them.
Now, why is that? You were forced to do it on your own. Were they, looking back?
They did do, you know, odd jobs to make money, but it just wasn't a drive for them. Okay. They work regular jobs today.
Okay, so it was in you. It was
my,
in
my
you.
Brother actually was involved with the starting of my business back in 2008. He was my first worker when he was living at my house. So he was there for the beginning, and then he moved on after about 6 months.
Well, let's talk about actually, that in 2008. Yeah. Why did you get started into business? I mean, did you have a regular job?
I did have a regular job. What I was actually doing was building a giant castle set with my brother. Like, we not a set, but we designed a castle that we wanted to build out of Lego.
So you were into Lego at that point?
I was. When he moved away, I had a bunch of this Lego, and we hadn't actually finished the castle. And so I had been researching where to find parts for the build and had stumbled across the website bricklink.com. And on that site, I saw lots of people selling pieces, and I thought of it as a good source for my project. But when my project fell through, I recognized it as a good source for getting rid of all the pieces that I now had that I didn't want anymore.
Hmm. And so this was something interesting to you. Did you see it as a way to make money, or just to to get rid of what you weren't using, and that would allow you to buy others?
I don't even think I intended to buy others. I really was just trying to get rid of the parts I had. And I sorted for about 3 months, getting them all organized so that I could open my store.
Whoa. Walk me through this. Sorted these pieces. Are you one of those guys that takes every little white brick, one unit, that goes in this one, two little nubs, I don't know what they call those things, and they're four in this one? Are you that guy?
I had to have them all organized so that I would know to sell them.
How long did that take?
It was 3 months. My family helped me with the sorting. We had a bunch of little Tupperware containers all stacked up in piles along the wall with different labels on them so we know which one went where.
I've seen the videos of some of those guys with these huge Brinklink stores, and I think to myself, my God, how do they get them sorted? Is that basically the premise of what happens? You buy a kit, you sort it down, take the valuable things out, whatever you're going to do, and then you actually literally have to say, okay, this one is a 1, this is a 2, and this color. I mean, is that how it goes? Even today,
but it's a lot more organized today. Back then, I didn't really have any clue what I was doing, and my major issue, well, once I'd sorted it all, I think I sorted it all by color first.
Okay.
And then I sub-sorted it by category, and then I sub-sorted it by actual piece. And I basically ran out of space for some of the pieces. I guess I'm back. I need to backtrack a little bit.
Well, I mean, contextually, I just need to understand this. When you sort by a color, how many, I'll call them SKUs for lack of a better term, because I'm an accountant, that's what I know. How many SKUs are there in the color white, logically?
Oh,
is there 20? Is there 100?
There's about 20,000 total types of parts the Lego catalog, and then each of those can potentially have multiple colors. So the SKU level is massive.
Oh my God. Wow. Okay, I'm overwhelmed. All right, I'm just thinking about, I mean, I guess it would be interesting for me for about a minute and a half, and then my adult ADHD would kick in, and I'd be like, oh my God, all right, what's next? What's next? I mean, that takes a special kind of person, doesn't it?
Yeah, someone with attention to detail, for sure.
Yeah, okay. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm just trying to get contextually, how much is this? And when you say there's 20,000 pieces...
Now, I've never seen all 20,000 of these. A lot of them are super rare. But the common ones, I frequently stock about 5,000 SKUs.
Really?
So, anyway...
5,000 SKUs, okay, wow. Dude, you're blowing my mind. Sorry. I'm all over the place. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
My initial batch that I sorted in that first 3 months was about 60,000 total pieces.
From this castle?
From the castle build that I was doing, yeah.
And let's just make sure I understand this. This was something you designed, and you got kits to make this, or you were buying them used, any place you could get them? Is that what happened?
I bought them used any place I could get them. I think the bulk of them I actually picked up from a guy off of eBay in Orlando. I was living there at the time, and he had a listing up on eBay saying, I think they were some castle minifigures. And I'd sent him a message on eBay, asked if he would do local pickup, and he didn't reply in time for the auction ending. And when he did finally get back to me afterward, he's like, well, those ones are already sold, but I have some more at my house if you want to come check them out.
Oh, my God.
So I showed up to his house, and he had huge bins. Like the 2.5 foot by 1.5 foot tall by 1.5 foot wide bins, and he probably had 20 of them
filled.
And filled full. He had actually sorted them by color already, and he was moving, I think, to Portland, Oregon, and he just needed to get rid of them all.
And so why would he have those? You got to help me understand this, because I have never had a collection. So he was a builder.
I believe he was a stop motion animation guy.
Okay. Okay, so I get that.
He'd made videos out of the pieces. So he had just, I think he was the youngest child in his family, and all the Lego had been passed down to him.
Okay.
And he was the last one leaving the house, so he had to do something with the Lego that they had accumulated.
Do you remember what you paid for?
I want to say it was $800 total.
That's a big investment. That's a lot of money.
It was a lot of Lego. It was worth probably $2,000-$3,000.
Okay, but it's still a lot of money. So, I mean, $800 for Lego is a lot of money. Now, that guy probably paid, you know, $20,000 for him, right? I mean,
over
at the time. Yeah, sure. Okay, so you spent $800. How do you get 20 tubs of Legos back and forth? I mean, did you have a big vehicle or anything?
I had a Geo Metro.
Oh, no.
And I drove back and forth literally 3 times to bring it all home.
That's funny. That's funny. Now, you brought him in the house. Did you have the space to fit all this stuff?
We had a decent-sized apartment then, my wife and I.
Okay.
And so I think we just dedicated one of our spare bedrooms entirely to that.
Okay, so let's talk about how this conversation goes. Honey, I've got this big idea. I'm going to build Legos. And she's looking at you like, dude, what's up with that? I mean, was she into it, or was she like, all right, I'm going to let you go?
She wasn't into it, but she was accepting of it. So.
Okay, wow, that's a special... You better hold on to that one, because that's a special kind of girl. So you bring these home. Did she still feel okay about this? Because you've now probably taken up probably half of an extra bedroom.
Yeah, she didn't have the space dedicated to anything else, so okay. I think she was okay with that.
I don't know if my wife would handle that well, I'll be honest with you. I ended up getting a warehouse... because it's a marriage enhancer. Just so you know, I mean, that's a good item to do. This is a pro tip right here. When your significant other starts complaining about the stuff in your house, it's time to get a warehouse. And it never happens again. It takes that off the table.
It took me about 5 more years, and now I have a warehouse.
Okay, so it does take it off the table. Agreed?
Yes, it has, yeah.
Because every so often it would be like, and your stuff is in. No, okay. Now she can't say that. So that's just a bonus tip. Anyway, okay. So you buy all these Legos. You bring them back. You said that they were semi-sorted for you already?
Yeah, they were sorted by color.
When you say that there's $2,000 worth of value. Now, this is 2008, you said.
I'm talking like a per pound value.
Okay,
like
right.
They often sold for like $5 or $6 a pound. And I estimated the total bet based on that was around $2,000 to $3,000.
It's interesting you say that, because that's a 2008. That's, you know, 9 years ago. And they still only sell for about $7 a pound, right?
I don't sell them by the pound anymore, so I'm a little bit out of that market.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I've seen them on eBay for about $7 a pound. And it's like, oh, okay, interesting. Yeah. So they really haven't gone up a tremendous amount in value. It's the rare parts that people know to strip out, right? That's the stuff that has the value.
I think the biggest issue now is that a lot of other clone brands get mixed in with them by default. And so those bulk batches are not a pound of Lego. You're getting maybe a half pound of Lego in the mix.
Oh, interesting. And those other batches, what are the other brands? I know that their patent is out, right? So people can copy them.
There's Mega Blocks.
Mega Blocks, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
There's some Tyco ones. Yeah, there's a whole mix of competitors that make inferior products.
And at that point, in 2008, though, that really didn't exist, right? Generally, I don't know if their patent was
limited.
Over. Okay, all right, so that's a little bit of it.
Mega Block was around. I ran into that occasionally, but it just wasn't as prevalent back then.
Okay, so this was not a business idea in 2008. Again, this was you going to build a castle. You're going to build this castle. And what was the idea of building a castle? What were you going to do with it?
Post pictures of it on the internet once it was done.
Okay. So kind of a blog thing. Right now it's a blog thing, right? I get it. I mean, it's you know, it's some record of, hey, I got an accomplishment, that kind of thing. Okay, so you build the castle and you finished the castle?
I didn't. We didn't even start building. We were in the design phase only when he left.
Whoa.
So I had all the parts literally ready for this build and didn't actually start the process. We had sketched up some concept designs and not the first two bricks got put together.
Oh my gosh. So now you're feeling a failure, right? Because you've bought all these blocks. Honey, here's the new conversation. Remember that castle I was going to build you, princess? It's not happening. How'd that go?
When she heard that I wanted to sell them, she was okay with it.
Yeah, I bet you she was. No kidding, right? So you had said that these were semi-sorted, right? But didn't sound perfect because it sounded like you still had to do more work to it. How did you know about, I mean, do all Lego nerds know about BrickLink?
I think I was searching for a specific part that I was considering for the build, and I just did a Google search for it, and one of the page search results was on a BrickLink page, and that got me there. And then I browsed around a little bit and thought, honestly, my first impression of the site was, this is nice as a resource, but they're kind of expensive.
And they're expensive relative to the garage
sale. To buying in bulk on eBay,
garage sales or stuff like that, right?
Exactly.
Okay, all right. And so at the time, and tell me if I don't know this to be true, BrickLink then versus BrickLink now, is there a difference?
Dramatically different.
Oh, there is.
It is. The website was designed in, I believe, 1999, 2000 range, and it looked like it.
Looked like an old eBay, right? The old eBay, right? That old terrible system. Yeah.
And it didn't change much over the next decade or so until the original owner died. And it didn't change for a couple years after that, but then it eventually got sold to a billionaire from South Korea, and he took it over and has been revamping it over the last 3 years, maybe four now, and it has, the interface has dramatically improved.
Well, I'm looking at it now. It is stunning. It is stunning what it looks like. I mean, the photography details, I remember it in the old version. It must have been, I don't know, how long ago did this guy take over?
I don't know off the top of my head, but...
Relatively recent, in the last few years?
Within the last 3 or 4 years, yeah.
Okay, so I've seen it before this because it did not look like this. I have not been here. How about from a selling point of view? Okay, so you were back there in 2008. Were Legos more popular then or now?
Definitely more popular now.
They're more popular now.
Yes.
But then you really had eBay, local something, and BrickLink pretty much to sell them on, correct?
Yes, that's all I was aware of.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, it really wasn't many other options because Amazon 2008 was going, but it probably wasn't ready. Yeah, right, in 2008. And so, okay, so you start selling. How do you know how to start up a store, especially in the archaic system it was? Was it easy to start up a store?
For that 3 months, I was reading the forum that they have on the site, and I don't think I posted at all. I read what people were having problems with, issues that people had between buyers and sellers, and I absorbed it all. And I took that information and I kept tweaking how I would set up my store and my terms for the store. And I think because of all the pitfalls that other people were running into, I was able to avoid them all by just reading and learning about it.
And that's a pro tip right there, because, you know, we all see people who pop into the, most of us do a lot of Amazon or eBay, I guess would be more, you know, prevalent than Bricklink. But it's true. People just pop in, hey, I saw one guy post today, and I'm not putting him down because I understand the question. I understand why he's asking. He's like, hey, can I sell Nike shoes without the box top lids cut off? Because they take them and they cut them off at the Nike store. Can I just send them into Amazon that way? And everybody's like, whoa, don't do that, right? Don't do that. But rather than going to read and do the research, which that question's been answered several hundred times because of the problems that people have gotten suspended because of that very issue, people don't do that much anymore, right? And so you're saying that if you do all that, you can avoid a lot of these pitfalls. So there's your pro tip right there. Spend a month reading, studying, answering the questions, setting it up, looking at the pitfalls, looking at what everybody else has had problems with, and set your system up to avoid those, right? And then, A, you don't come across asking the worst possible questions. Even though we've all had them, you still want to do some of the legwork. So 3 months it took you. That's a long time, and that's a lot of patience.
It was just my hobby in the evenings when I got home from work, pretty much.
Well, I mean, I guess somebody's probably wondering, why didn't you just sell them on eBay? You knew that there's a market for them in eBay. You knew that you know that there's probably $2,000 worth of value for your $800 investment.
That initial thought when I saw Bricklink was, these are expensive here.
Ah.
And so my natural response was, then I should be selling them here.
Yeah, so we got a little bit of a bright person there who's saying the light bulb went off and said, this is probably an opportunity, not a negative. When you're sitting on several thousand pounds of Lego. So I like it. I like your thinking. Because it's probably, what, was it two? I mean, how many pounds was it? It's got to be.
It would have been around 500 pounds.
500 pounds. Oh my God, that's a lot of pounds. Wow. Okay. So, by the way, were they all cherry picked? Because the value, the way I understand it, is in the minifigs being the highest value items. Is that still true?
He had sold a lot of the minifigs, like the listing that I had inquired about. So it was cherry picked in the sense that most of the figures were gone, but there were some left, and he did include them all with the batch.
Especially if he was moving, he had to get rid of all that jazz, right?
Yeah, and he was just done with it. At the time, I told him I was going to build this big castle, and so he was happy to give it to another builder. I must send an apology out to him. I don't know who he is now today, but I didn't end up building it, so I fell through on that deal.
In your mind, you built it though, right? In your mind, you built it.
Of course. I did not lie to him. I was intending to build it. So I can really thank him today, because it's where it's led to where I've been so much different than I would have been if I hadn't gone down this road.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. What do you think you would have been doing? You know, I mean, if you did not find these Legos, you were still industrious and you still had that entrepreneurial bug. What do you think? I mean, you must have had that thought.
Well, actually, I was pursuing a math education degree to be a high school math teacher at the time.
Do you regret not doing that?
I feel like someday I could still retire into that.
Okay. So you feel like you have that you can offer. And, you know, let's face it, when you can offer entrepreneurial experience, real life experience, and bring that into the classroom, that's probably a good teaching experience.
I'm sure it would be.
Okay. So we get the store set up 3 months. And at this
day
point,
one,
You're still working though, right? You're still working.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. Yeah, I was working full time still.
Okay.
So yeah, day one, I got 10 orders for like $200. I had no feedback, and I could not believe the people that would be willing to risk money on a nobody.
Now hold on, $200 is a lot of money to sell on eBay a day. So to sell it on this little site called Bricklink, that's very specific, very.
It blew my mind that there was that much volume there.
I mean, how much stuff is that $200 worth of orders out of your eight or 20 tubs?
I would say, I mean, I probably sold them for somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 cents a piece. So that was probably 2,000 parts.
Out of,
well, shoot, well, 500 pounds. Maybe 150,000 total parts.
Holy crap.
60,000 of which I actually had listed.
No kidding. And 60,000, then, that's about a third of what you had?
Yes.
Why did you only stop listing there? Is it because you wanted to get started, or did they cap you?
I needed to prove the concept.
Okay. All right, you wanted to do this. And did you tell your wife, hey, I got this bright idea, I'm going to be a Lego seller? I understand that she's happy you're going to sell it.
It was literally to get it out of the house and make some money while doing it. Hmm. And yeah, so that's why I started it. Now, the orders kept flowing in, and I kept sorting what I had more of. I don't think I had quite 150,000, but somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 plus thousand pieces. And so I continued sorting the stuff that hadn't been sorted and adding it to the store. And I finally got to a point where I ran out of stuff that was worth listing.
Really?
And they continued to sell. And so I was at a decision point. Do I just continue to mark down prices and clear out my store to get rid of all the pieces? Or do I go find some more?
Well, before you answer that question, let me ask this. How much of the, let's just say the 100,000 pieces that you had, how much did you go through by that point?
Okay, I am actually going to pull up my BrickLink data.
Well, because I guess I'm wondering is how, you know, like what wasn't worth it? How much of that, you know, that batch wasn't worth it? And then I guess I would ask that going forward, have you seen that trend roughly the same? You know, as you said, that you're now going to find three other or four other, actually, I see a lot of Chinese copies of it now too. You know, probably five or six extra different types of Lego types in a batch of Lego that are not Lego. So you got to sort that out, right? So 50% of it goes away right off the top. And then what percentage of that Lego will never sell in its single form is where I was going.
There's always some dregs that just don't move very well at all. But you'd be surprised by some things that do actually move if the price is low enough. There's a very small subset of parts that just literally cannot sell. I've destroyed very few of my collection over the years just for space purposes and freeing up inventory space. But it really comes down to price. There's some weird, weird parts that people just make it a challenge to figure out how to use. And so it's some designer comes up with a design that they publish online, and it happens to use some rare part that hasn't been used before because it's weird. And suddenly there's demand for it, and
that's awesome.
Tons of people buy it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, I mean, that's what, you know, to me, that sounds like a great arbitrage opportunity. You know, design something, don't put it out there, go and buy it all up, then go and put it out there. Hey, look at this new thing. And magically, I happen to have all of them.
I do have a story for that.
Ah, so I'm not the first person to think like a criminal. I'm sorry. I apologize, Lord.
There was a Mars lander machine that was made by designed by the people at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory who made the actual Mars rover. And they put it out online. And the guy who built it used a 2x3 dark orange slope that was from a 2006 set. And only from that set. It had a bulk amount of them in that set, but he designed it, I believe, in 2010, 2011. And so the parts were readily available on the market because they just weren't very good sellers. But because of his design and its popularity, that piece became the choke point of design using that,
build. That sounds like higher prices.
I bought out the market.
Did you really?
I did.
I mean, what does that mean? How many units did you buy? 100, 200?
I want to say about like 1,000, maybe 1,500 pieces. The design required, I believe, like 8 of them.
Oh, wow.
It was basically the surface of Mars that it was rolling on, and it needed a bit of a hilliness, and it was the right color. And that's why he used it. So anyway, I bought out the market of everything that was what I deemed reasonably priced, which was somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 cents a piece to 20 cents a piece. And because of that design, I believe I sold them for an average of about $2 a piece.
Oh my gosh. I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but when we're talking 1,000 of these pieces, you know,
exactly.
For a $150 investment, you know. Now, people are sitting there saying, oh my God, I can't imagine selling something for 10 cents. I mean, have you ever sold something for 10 cents?
I have sold stuff for a half a cent.
For half a cent plus shipping.
Now, I have I have a minimum order in my store. You have to spend $5.
Okay, so it's a $5 order, and so, and then what's the shipping on a $5 order? Because it, you know, like you're, I mean, I'm sure it's very light, a couple ounces.
Yeah, the lowest rate for USPS is in like $2 and something cents.
Okay, and so you are you required to charge the actual postage, kind of, you know, or the people?
I'm not required to, but I did. I made a point of charging exactly what it cost me to ship it, and then, just the postage.
Just the postage. So you ate the cost of the envelope, which doesn't sound like much, but when you're sending out thousands of packages, it adds up. And tape if you need it, or if you have self-seal, I guess you probably use little poly mailers or something like that, bubble mailers.
Yeah, and
so you're now, your time to go and pull that $5 order. How many pieces is the $5 order typically? Guess.
Say $5 order at about 10 cents each. Yeah.
Okay. And when somebody orders that 50 order, is it?
But that's not my typical order.
Okay. But is that, I mean, when they're ordering the cheap ones, does it typically, you know, one of these, two of these, ones of these, is that a lot?
It can't be that way. Okay. It can't be that way. Those are my loss leaders. I absorb it, but average it out. I'm okay.
Okay. What's your average sale?
About $33.
Okay. So similar to an Amazon sale.
It is. Yeah.
Okay. And let me ask this question. Do you have to look at the shine on these blocks and make sure that they're a certain quality, make sure they're clean? I've seen the cleaners, people wash them, but, or, I mean, can you mix new sets with used sets? I mean, is that taboo? Is there a quality issue?
At the time, I had a tier system of quality. Each part was rated according to its condition. And I dealt only in used pieces.
Okay. So that makes it easier. So that helps.
So I had the, you know, the best quality ones had top tier. I think it just said tier one, tier two, tier three. And then my splash page described what those meant. And then I had a lower level where I just threw them out. Anything that was chewed or just something I wouldn't want to build with, I got rid of.
And do you still have it that set up now?
My setup has changed quite a bit over the years. I do not deal in used anymore at all.
Oh, that's interesting.
The only stuff we sell now is new, and we source it directly from retail stores when there's clearances, and we buy them in bulk, and the bulk helps with the processing time per piece and makes it much more affordable.
Okay, so let's I'm going to take a break because I do want to. I'm staying on this story of BrickLink today. I mean, and we'll get to the partnership, and because you also sell on Amazon, and I don't want to downplay that. But my point here is that this is a total another market, and you're not the first person that we've talked to about BrickLink. But BrickLink is going strong. I mean, do you know anyone who personally makes their full time living on BrickLink?
I've gone to some Lego shows where I met lots of people that do it.
Okay. So this is their full time. They don't even sell on, maybe they don't, maybe they sell on Amazon, maybe not, but generally speaking, they don't need to if this is their thing. And so BrickLink is just one example. There are other, you know, clothing sites. There are other, you know, certain niches, and selling on a niche site when you're good, if you put all the effort in and do the work, can be a great living, and you're not limited to an eBay or an Amazon or a Shopify of your own site, right? And so I just think that it's important for people to sit back and figure out, hey, if you're into Legos, and clearly you were into Legos, right? I mean, that's part of it. Yeah, that's an attraction, right? If you're not into Legos, this probably isn't a good business model for you. But if you're into it and you're a Lego nerd, or if you're a video game nerd, I think of the video game sites where they're exactly the same, or the record sites exactly the same. This is a great place to go. All right, let's do this. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about what was then versus what was now, and then how you expanded to get a partner. Okay? We'll be right back.
Okay.
You know, it's so easy when you get a sponsor for the show and you use their services. And I do. It's Karen Locker's Solutions for E-Commerce. solutionsforecommerce.com/momentum will get you 10% off right now. I've been using her for, I guess it's been a year and change since I first interviewed her. Hired her pretty much right after the show because I'm like, I need everything you're talking about. I've got problems with stranded inventory. And guess what? I had lots of problems with stranded inventory last year as the restrictions were coming through. Boom, she'd fix it. If there's an issue with the photo, fixed. All that kind of stuff. I get refunds now. They just show up. Hey, you know, we're replying to your cases. Here's your refund. My feedback. I don't have to fix my own feedback anymore. It's automatically done. And I see the notes coming through. I still once in a while get an email from Amazon saying, hey, you have some stranded inventory. I send it to her, and most of the time, it's already been dealt with and fixed. But let me tell you, being a single operator, my wife and I, this just takes so much off our plates. I can't say enough about it. It's Solutions for E-commerce, the number 4, Solutions for E-commerce /Momentum to get 10% off her services. Be sure you tell her I sent you. SolutionsforEcommerce.com. Angie Slamage right now is saying, man, you peppered that poor guy with questions. You're right, I did. But it's so interesting, and again, he was just so giving and giving out the information, and I just think it's a great story. We spend a lot of time talking, and I get excited about inventory again, but I think it's transferable. These are transferable skills and transferable to other channels. I love the story of the partnership. I definitely spend some time talking about the partnership. And what I appreciated that Brock was saying is that it isn't always perfect. They disagree and how they get through that. That's what's so important. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Brock Sutton, and we're talking BrickLink, heavy duty BrickLink, because it's interesting to me. And again, this BrickLink is the same as the record site, I forget what it's called, and there's several of those, or the video game site, where very specific niches where people buy and sell similar things to each other because you're into it. And I love it because I think it's something different, and I think it's exciting because you have found a niche here, and you moved from used to new. So let's pick it up there. Why did you go from used to new?
The biggest difference was how much time it took to process and identify the parts. If I had 50 copies of a set, I knew exactly what was in each one of those sets, and I could just multiply it by 50. And so we'd be able to sort it all out by all its pieces, and then we'd be able to say, well, this piece had 2 in each set, so there's 100 of these. We don't need to count them. We toss them in the bucket.
Well, so let's just pause on that for a second. So you buy 50 sites of blah, 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 Star Wars. When you come back, are you sorting all 50 sites? Are you breaking them down, or are you storing them?
We tear them all open. We sort them out, but there's sub bags that are all the same in each set. And so each of those sub bags have been separated out. And then you just sort that one bag at a time until all the pieces are done.
And you sort them in, probably you're evolved to trays or something more efficient at this point.
Yeah, we actually have, you know, basically bookshelves full of varying sizes of containers, from tackle boxes for the smallest stuff with little slider dividers,
right,
all the way up to shoebox and larger, and every single thing is sealed because the enemy of Lego is dust.
Okay,
and so we got to keep everything dust free as much as possible.
Okay, and so you're opening these bags and you're throwing them in, 2 in this one and 1 in this one, 1 in this one, and you guys are just doing that. What do you do with the boxes?
We recycle them.
Okay, so you're not saving them and reselling them, because I guess I've seen that over the years on old Lego boxes.
I've kept a few of the rarer sets, larger modular type sets, and I still have the boxes for those stashed in my closet. But as a general rule, I do not keep them anymore.
Okay.
I keep instructions out of the sets for at least 3 years just to see if they've gained any value over that time, and then toss them if they aren't.
Okay, and because they can get the instructions online, but if you're trying to build a set and you're a collector, you want to have the original instructions.
You want to have the original, exactly.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so you do that too. Okay, so going from used, is the used Lego business gone? Is that still
No.
a viable business?
It's not very profitable. It's definitely a hobby style business.
Okay.
It's the person who's building themselves and have some extra parts. It's great to throw those on there and have a small store, bring in a little bit of income to go buy the parts you actually want. That I've seen that frequently with my buyers.
But generally speaking, buying 800 pounds at a yard sale is not a good viable business to create a BrickLink store today versus what it was when you did.
Probably not. It's definitely not the best way to do it. I'm sure there's people with systems in place to do the sorting more, and maybe an automated fashion could definitely deal in used and make good money at it. I did not want to build that system.
So let me make sure I understand this. Is it because the price is not high, or the cost of time is too high?
Cost of time is too high. Definitely.
Cost of time. So the market value. Can you sell
the profit differential for a used piece? You can buy a used piece by the pound and sell it by the piece, and you can make, you know, 200 times this purchase cost. But the time you spent identifying it, cleaning it, sorting it kills all the profit, in my opinion.
Okay. And so does a used piece sell for a lot less than a new piece generally, or is it roughly the same if the conditions are close?
I would say about 2/3 of the value.
Okay. Okay. So there is a lesser value. So from that point of view, there's a reason. Now, when you buy in bulk at clearance and liquidation stuff, that whatever you can find, have you calculated what the price per pound is that you're paying in that scenario, ideally?
I have. I don't usually think in terms of price per pound anymore, but when I've done the calculation, it was somewhere in the neighborhood of between $20 and $30 a pound.
Okay, so you're paying significantly higher than you would pay at that $6 to $8 an hour.
But the volume
$6 to $8 a pound.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, the capability of doing the volume and faster sorting just overwhelms that difference very quickly.
Okay. And so is there a limit to the number of sets that you would buy? I mean, does it not matter if it's generic?
Price will be the determining factor. If I find a set at the right price and they have, and I can find 300 of them or 1,000 of them, and I have the funds to do it, I'll do it. You know, there's always at least some subset of the parts that will sell well and recoup my investment.
When you look at, you know, one of the things I remember looking at on BrickLink was the part out value, right? There are people that have taken every single set and said, okay, the part out value is $68, right? Is that accurate?
I find that my prices are actually a little bit below the part out value of the average for the full site. The site is an international one. There's lots of other currencies involved, and that price will not always translate to sales. But it's usually a very strong indicator of the value. Sometimes there'll be outliers that throw off the numbers. But I try to buy something at about a 3.0 part out value. In other words, every dollar I spend needs to have $3 in value in my store once it's done sorting.
Well, 100% of that particular unit doesn't sell, correct?
Generally. No, we definitely don't sell all of it, but it's definitely a long game. It's a collection of long tail items that will eventually sell, and usually price is the indicator because it's a very price driven market.
And has there been automation amongst the site like you see on more on Amazon than you see on eBay even? But eBay has its own little repricers too. Have you seen repricers or other things?
I have not.
Scraping tools?
I have not seen a repricer that works on BrickLink. In fact, I inquired with some companies to try to do it for myself, and they looked at BrickLink and said no.
Hey, you must not be able to get to the source code possibly. You know, if you can't get to the data, then...
I don't know what the technical hurdles were, but they were there.
Okay. You know, it's interesting to me. So let's talk money, and you don't have to get specific about you. So I don't want to get too personal, and you just tell me if I go too deep. But I'm trying to understand what's a reasonable expectation. So, you know, let's say we spend $1,000 and you say your goal is to have $3,000 worth of breakout value. Do you factor down that three? So you're looking
$4,000
a breakout value, knowing that you're going to get.
Well, no. The starting point is the $3,000.
Okay. So you.
I expect it to drop, but in the end, I at least more than double my money.
Fees, because this would be a huge difference in fees, right? So I'm sure they take a small percentage.
They do. BrickLink takes 3%.
Okay. And so, and not the 15%.
And all my payments are through PayPal there. So my total cost out the door is between, you know, 6% and 7%.
And normally, is it additional shipping? Do the people charge additional shipping? Is that understood?
Yes, it's the cost of the parts plus the shipping cost.
Okay, so you don't have to worry about that getting any. So it's really, I mean, it's 90. What did you say? 6%, 5 to 6%.
Yes, yeah, so I'm taking 94% of the money.
So 94%, as opposed to an Amazon, that would be a, you know,
more
maybe
like
a
70%.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, 70%. Okay, and now the big difference is you're doing the picking and pack, or you're having people do the picking and packing, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay, and so you've moved into a warehouse. How much space, how many SKUs did you say you had?
Roughly 5,000.
So 5,000 SKUs, which I'm sure you've got multiple. How much space does something like that take up in a warehouse?
Well, we are currently in an 1,800 square foot space, and there's just a whole ton of shelves in kind of U shapes going in and out along the walls. What we actually do when we get an order is we have a rolling cart that has tubs underneath it and a laptop on top. And we roll around with that. The laptop's telling us what to pull and where it's located on each of the shelves. So every container has its own lettering and numbering system. And so it's alphabetized all the way around the space. And so you work your way alphabetically around the room and you pull each order one at a time.
So hold on a second. So are colors separated by colors or by part? What's the determination?
I have gotten rid of the sorting by color. It is not useful. It is completely an index system. A new part needs a certain volume of space, and that will dictate what type of container it goes into. The next available container that size, we dump it in there, and we write down what container it got put into.
So the containers are numbered. They're assigned some kind of SKU number, and you're able to put that in your brick link. And so when you export that order, it tells you what shelf, what box number, that kind of thing.
That's correct.
Are there multiple colors in that box?
No. Every piece has its own space.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm an accountant, so you got to understand this inventory stuff is very exciting to me. I mean, it is. I'm a nerd on this stuff, but it really is exciting because, you know, let's not call it Legos. Let's call it shoes. 5,000 SKUs is a very difficult management tool. I mean, just think about that, right? It's 5,000 SKUs is a good sized store. I mean, you know, bring them up in size and make them shoes. 5,000 different pairs of shoes is a lot of shoes.
And Lego is nuanced in its appearance. There's so many similar parts that it's very easy to confuse the two. I would say with shoes, you could actually distinguish them even more easily than you could with Lego.
Well, I'm just trying to get people perspective to realize that, you know, to manage a 5,000 piece store, you know, as you say, it's only taking up a few hundred feet. It's an enormous amount of work because it's just as much. Well, even like you're saying it's easier to see shoes because the outside of the box would be labeled and it would be a little clearer. This isn't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really interesting to me that you've built this system. Did you study anyone else to figure out how to, or is this just hit or miss and doing it for 7, 8, 9 years?
That's where the forums kicked in. There was people who were posting displays of how they organized their stuff. And there was debates all the time about what the ideal system was. And there was lots of ideas out there and many people who were vehement about their plan being the best one. And so I tried a couple different things over the years. But that system, which was decentralized from color or any other sorting mechanism besides just physical space that it took up. The downside to the system is when something goes wrong, finding the missing piece is even harder.
It's impossible. it's impossible. Wait, I have 4,333 live SKUs on eBay, and I have a very similar inventory system, very similar. And there's certain things that go in a box because they're similar, but generally speaking, it's very similar to Amazon, which is the first available space. It used to be, put them all together. It's actually harder when you have similar items next to each other because you got to look at every single one. When a Barbie is sitting alone on a shelf as opposed to a box of Barbies, which I sold one today, so I had to look through four boxes of Barbies because they're all grouped together in this one area, this particular shelf, it's harder to find it. It took me a while to find it. When it's alone on a shelf next to a pair of shoes, next to a ski jacket, it's very easy. It stands out. And so that's Amazon model. Yep. It's whatever the first available space is, the closest space. That's their model. I modified my business to do that same thing, and it makes it so much easier. And that's what you're saying. You're doing the same thing. Boom, next space available. Boom.
Yep.
So that's a pro tip if you're doing inventory. Would you do me a favor? Could you send me some pictures? I would love to have some pictures because contextually, I just don't think people could put their mind around what it would take. Just a couple or a card or something like that would be very cool. Nothing. You don't have to stage anything. I just think for context, it would be helpful to people if you're okay with that. And if you're not, no worries.
I can definitely do that. I think I will have to actually go over to my space and take some pictures because I don't think I have any on me.
It'd be awesome because I think from context, again, I just think that, you know, people ask me all the time, hey, can I see your eBay inventory? And I did a presentation and I have pictures of it and I've sent it to a bunch of different people. And I did get really you know, especially in today's day and age, because people are thinking about what to do with it. I'm restricted in selling Legos on Amazon. What do I do with all these Lego sets? Now, your advice is to sell them to you, right? At a good price.
I just about said that.
Yeah, well, that's okay. You're allowed to say that. And I get that, because this is not something for everyone, is it?
No, I've seen plenty of people that have, you know, done the thing, built their own little store, and it just didn't last.
Well, why does yours last? Let's be honest. I mean, why is yours lasting?
I've seen most of the failures are due to problems with customers because they haven't had the right item or haven't had the right condition of item, and they're not quick about getting stuff shipped out. So it's about efficiency. It's about meeting the customer's needs as quickly as possible and as accurately as possible. And I've drilled that into my workers that is the top priority. If you take twice as long to get the order pulled and it's 100% accurate, I would prefer that over paying you half as much and having an unhappy customer.
Because they're not coming back, right?
Exactly. And a lot of our business is repeat customers.
Is there a feedback system on BrickLink?
There is.
There is?
Yeah.
Okay, so you get to rate the customer, the customer gets to rate you?
Yes.
Okay, and so that's a big deal. I mean, that's good and bad, right? There's, you know, because when you do get a wacko or you get somebody trying to rip you off, those are problems. I'm sure they exist there as they do on eBay or they do on Amazon, right? Those problems are the outliers.
It's less prevalent. I think our biggest issue is international shipments going missing, but I think that's everybody's problem with international shipments.
Right. And are you forced to offer international or is that an option?
It's an option, and I chose to go with it because about 40% of my business is overseas.
That's interesting. 40%. And are their orders typically larger?
Yes.
Yeah, that would make sense.
More valuable and generally smaller volume, which is, you know, like focused on minifigures and other smaller, more valuable things.
So if somebody's thinking about this as a business, what's your advice? I mean, is there of course you're going to say go and study the forums for several months and learn all what not to do and set all that up. But realistically, I mean, how much is an investment for somebody who wants to make $1,000 a month? I mean, how much of an investment do they need to make and how long does that take to get up and running?
I personally ran this with no profit taken out for the first 3 years. I was working full time while I did it. And I just kept pulling every dollar I made from the business right back into more inventory. And that allowed me to snowball it up to a value that I could eventually pay myself equal to my current salary. And that's when I quit my job.
And it took 3 years. Wow. And, but you were selling used back then, to be fair.
It was, yes. Okay. And I if I did it all over again, I would have gone straight to new.
Straight to
it
new.
It would have gone a lot faster.
So, I mean, is it 100 sets? Is it 1,000 sets? I mean, what is it? I'm just trying to get context.
In order to bring in $1,000 a month?
Yeah.
Oh, I sell through about 20% of my inventory a month is pretty normal.
Wow.
So 1,000 would require $5,000 in inventory. But I will add the caveat that the more you get variety and the more deep you go on the same item, the more likely you pick up buyers. Hmm. Because buyers are looking for their build. They want this many pieces of that particular one and this many pieces of another. And if your store happens to catch a larger chunk of what they're looking for, they're more likely to place the order. And so it requires depth and width.
Are you still at a $5 minimum or has that gone up?
I believe I still am.
Okay. Okay. Do you get to set that minimum yourself?
I am going to my splash page right now to confirm it, but I'm fairly certain it's $5. Yes, you can decide. Yeah, minimum buy is $5 still.
And what percentage of your buys are $5?
Very few.
Okay, so it's not an issue. So it's a self-imposed barrier that really doesn't need to be there, right? And I don't want to sell that because they're hassles. Well, you know, you're not selling it, so it doesn't really matter. You said your average is $33.
Yes.
And I assume you have significant feedback.
I'm just under 10,000.
Okay, so that sounds like significant to me. On any other forum, on eBay or Amazon, that would be an enormous number. How long does it take to actually, you know, get enough feedback to be considered a real? I mean, is there 100 feedback for people to say, okay, is a real player?
When I'm buying, which I do sometimes on BrickLink. I will consider someone with 100 feedback knowledgeable enough about the process that if they're trying to do the right thing, they'll be able to do the right thing.
Oh my gosh. You know, I'm fascinated by it. I'm blown away. You've got 5,000 SKUs. That's a significant investment. You're selling 20% of your inventory. That means you're doing a lot of buying to maintain that. You're clearly doing a lot of buying. I mean, how often, how many times a week are you making a purchase?
I do it in bursts. I often will when a sale hits, I might travel all of the Southeast for several days and buy as much as I possibly can, and then stockpile it while I'm waiting for my workers to catch up all the parting out of the pieces.
What type of person does it take to have the patience to do that parting? Is that, I mean, have you noticed a pattern amongst the people that you hired for that?
I guess so. I would say that they're less social people.
Ah, okay.
The ones that are willing to be alone in their own world doing something. I found that
gamers?
Gamers would definitely fall into that category.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's true. I mean, I've seen them. You know, they tend to be that type of person, which is kind of cool. Are they Lego nerds too? I mean, are they into it?
They are. They're pleased with their employee discounts in the store.
Do you ever... do you ever get the urge to go out to yard sales or things like that to look for Legos still?
Not anymore.
Even for the collectible crap?
There's just no appeal. The amount of work to find it is so
okay.
Not rewarding.
You're not a collector anymore on your own?
I do collect, but I generally buy it new and build it myself.
Okay. Are you a Lego investor also, meaning you're buying sets, holding on to them, and knowing that they're going to go up in value?
For 1 year, I was.
Ah.
I went from a stage where I was basically doing everything myself with the occasional person helping part, and that was in between 2008 and 2010 when I was doing it for no income. And then I switched at that point, I believe in 2012 was when I switched, and I said, okay, I'm done with parts. I sold off my entire store. I kept all the sets that I was going to be parting out, and then I took the oldest ones and started selling them off. And so I lived for a full year on the income of selling just sets that had been sitting for at least a year. And then the bug hit me and I went back to parts. And that's when I scaled up. That's when I hired my first employees. I registered the business because prior to that, I was just treating it like a hobby. And anyway, so that's the year where I went from keeping 100,000 pieces in a store and jumped it up to like 500,000 pieces.
Half a million pieces. Used or new?
At that point, it was already all new.
It was already all new.
I did used for about 2 years and that's it.
And how did you get the money to fund 500,000 pieces? I mean, because how many sets is that? You know, the average set has, you know, like 100 pieces?
400 pieces.
Oh, is it 300 or 400?
300, yeah.
So you're talking a material amount of quantity. How did you get the money for that?
Well, a lot of the sets were from the ones I'd had kept whole and just hadn't sold them yet. So I parted out what things I still had in bulk. And then I had been selling the sets and had cash left over from that. So I turned and rolled that back into buying more for parting purposes again.
So, you know, just sitting here thinking, this is stupid common sense. You're going to be like, duh, Steve, of course. But I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. A box that's damaged but still sealed is new for what you're doing. Right. You're going to say,
absolutely.
Duh, of course. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So when a pallet gets damaged or whatever, and that gets liquidated, right? If anybody knows that, right? When stuff is transported by a trucking company, they have the responsibility. If it gets damaged in transport, the buyer usually will not accept it because they can't sell it because the packaging isn't perfect and the company doesn't want it back. They file a claim with their insurance company or the trucking insurance company and they get their money.
They liquidate it. Yep.
That company, that trucking company, will liquidate it as fast as they can to get paid because they're not getting paid for transporting it and damaging it. That's where they lose. So they will liquidate as fast as they can to get the money, and they're not going to hold on to it because what are they going to do with this stuff because it happens thousands of times, right? And so that's a big opportunity to buy damaged package. And so damaged package Lego, this is a great place to sell it. Fair?
Absolutely, yes.
And you've run into those deals, I'm certain.
I have.
How do you run into those deals, and how often do you run into those deals?
I will not state the source because that would be detrimental to me.
That's smart.
But there are clearance outlets that handle Lego on a regular basis, and I'm checking them.
Okay. And so you know those just over time, you just pay attention and you see patterns and recognize those patterns.
They tend not to understand the value of the set.
That's not a bad thing for you.
Sometimes it's the wrong direction.
Oh, meaning that they want, you know, hey, this is $1 million set here. This is gold plated.
I'm sure they look it up on Amazon and they make that as their basis, and it'll sit for a long time at that price.
And then you get a chance to come back and say, hey, let me know. Here's my card. I want you to, when you're ready to sell it, and if you're, you know, get your $1 million. That's a good deal. Go for it. If it doesn't, I'm here for you, but I'm at $5. Right. Well, that's fair. I mean, it's not an unreasonable thing because, you know, let's face it, they might get a couple of buyers at that high price because they're selling it builder collectible, I'll call it, for lack of a better term, right? Where it's discounted from retail. But that's not what you can buy it on to be able to make money. I mean, I imagine, though, there are some sets, because of the rarity of them, that you can pay full retail and still make money at it, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And how do you know that?
Every time I come up to a set, I decide, well, first I check the part out value on BrickLink to see if it's worth parting at that price that it's at.
And you're looking at that 3X. You're looking for your 3X. Yep. $10 or to 30 or more.
Now we do sell on Amazon as well today. Right. So I'll check Amazon's pricing if it can be sold used, if it's damaged, or new, if it's in good condition. And weigh the pros and cons of each outlet.
Because, well, let's talk about that for a second. So the price is $10. On BrickLink, the part-out value is $30. You know in your mind that you're not going to get 30 because you know not all of it's going to sell, right? And it's a little overinflated. Yep. So that's already factored in. It's selling for $25 on Amazon, and you're saying to yourself, well, they're going to take 30% of that, right? So you're factoring that in. And are you checking eBay or no? You don't waste your time at this point.
I don't deal in eBay at all.
Okay, so you're ignoring that. So those two things combined, you're saying it's either good for either one. And if it triggers either one of them, is it a buy?
Then I buy it.
Okay.
Yep.
And then is the decision made or is it still looked at one more time to decide?
It's a factored between the two if they're both good. Deciding whether the quick flip is better.
Well, I was going to say that. I assume the Amazon sale is a faster sale than it is.
Most definitely.
And yeah. I say that, but there are Lego that does not have a good rank on Amazon, correct?
Oh, yes.
Okay. And so they're not necessarily going to be the fast turn on Amazon other than doing it by price, right? That's the only difference. Yeah.
So yeah, it's a weight of, you know, the sales rank on Amazon versus, you know, expected payout for parting it. And then I also care about how much quantity I have of a set. I don't want to part out a single set.
How do you know that? How do you know your inventory levels?
I have a software called BrickStock that I use to
the secret keep track tool. Of all my,
yes, that's how I keep track of what parts I have and also what sets I have.
So this is an inventory system specific to Lego that you can interface to BrickLink.
Correct. So a BrickLink user developed it around a decade ago.
And what does it do for you?
It allows me to take the new inventory that I'm getting and combine it with my current inventory so that I know what locations to put duplicated parts in.
And then when you're putting a new item in, you create the SKU code, whatever your common number is, and you store that in BrickStock, and then that transfers over into BrickLink.
Correct.
So when a sale is made, BrickLink tells BrickStock, hey, take this out of inventory. Are you shipping from BrickStock or BrickLink?
BrickLink. Okay. Well, actually, PayPal typically is my...
Well, I guess
to be clear, I actually use stamps.com and it pulls from PayPal because that's where all my payments come from, as well as from Amazon. My orders.
I meant the shipping, the order form. Is it a BrickLink order form or is it a BrickStock order form? That's telling you to pick and pack.
When we're picking and packing, it's coming from BrickLink.
BrickLink. But it still interfaces with BrickStock. Okay. All right. So what I've learned over the years, this is my little pro tip, is that when I've been known to buy stores of stuff, like literally the whole hobby shop, I'll buy it all. And so I have 10 of a particular SKU. I'll go when someone sells and it says I have 9 left. It's a habit and it's only because I've had problems in the past, I make sure that there are nine on the shelf when I'm checking that spot.
That is part of our process.
That is part of your process. So my question was, that's why I was asking if you pulled from BrickStock or BrickLink. BrickLink in that same report tells you how many you have left?
Yes, right on the order page, it'll say they ordered four of this item and there's 24 left.
And so you require the employee to look?
When it reaches a threshold that's low enough that it's easy to check the count, they check the count.
Okay, because stuff disappears, right?
Yeah.
You know, hey, I should have five of these left, and you're seeing only two. You're like, oh, boy. That's a time. Tell me, and we'll fix the inventory level, right?
Yes. We try to catch it before the person orders it, and we don't have it.
Right.
When we do run into issues where we've oversold and don't have the pieces we need, depending on what it is, or how minimal it is, sometimes we'll just contact the buyer and say, hey, we're short a few pieces here, and refund the cost of it. Other times when it's more significant, we'll actually order from other BrickLink stores to have it fulfilled.
Right.
To make sure that they get the customer taken care of. So.
Right. And we've all done that. So there's a pro tip, though. So you're doing it a little bit different. So you're saying, hey, when it gets down to the lower end, guys, just check. It's saying that there's, you know, you see three in the box. You're over there making sure the machine says that there's three, right? And if there's a difference, stop. Let's fix it before the problem becomes. That's a great pro tip. And it's very simple to do at that level, right? You're not checking everything. You're only checking the things that are selling.
If it's higher, they can eyeball it as well. Like if the quantity says 200, you can glance at it. And if you've been doing it long enough, you can say, that looks about like 200.
Yeah.
Or you can say, there's something significantly wrong here. And that's when we step in. And actually,
one is here and they're saying there's 200. We got a problem, right?
Exactly.
Okay. But that's a pro tip. And it's important. If you do it at that level, at that scale, it's manageable. You don't have to manage your whole store. You're managing it as you sell certain things. That's a great tip. Okay. So I think we beat this thing down. It sounds like it's a great business model. Would you get back into it again, starting over again, knowing what you know now? You already said that you would go right to new. Do you think this is a viable business for somebody? And if so, give them advice on what it would take to get started.
And
I guess how long it would take. I mean, that was one of the things we didn't really say, but when you buy a set, you say 20% sells. Well, that's 20% of your overall sell, right? It's not 20% of a set. You buy a brand new set, you're not selling 20% of that set right away.
Well, I would actually say that the newest stuff being added to the store is probably more likely to sell a higher percentage than the overall store, because there's a long tail of stuff that's been dragging for sometimes years.
Okay.
But
that makes sense, yeah.
So oftentimes, probably 50% of that particular set sells out in the first month, just because the prices have been refreshed to the market price. They're new pieces that people haven't seen. It's the cream of the crop, really, that's being pumped into the system.
Well, at 50%, you're getting your investment back plus some.
That's why I do it.
Right. I mean, because you know you're spending 6% of the retail price in fees. But you're getting 50% back. Oh, that's a great. There's a great little nugget to think about. So that's why you do it. So your advice again is that this is probably still a good business model. Do you see it? It's significantly changing. Are prices declining, steady, or are they ebb and flow? And generally, though, it's been pretty steady.
Across the board, they're generally trending downward. Lego is in more demand this year than any previous year. And the Lego movies have been driving that, in my estimation. So as a general consumer product, it's the number one toy brand in the world, and it's been that for the last 2 years. So the demand is through the roof for at least the consumers buying the full sets, and I would assume that translates into people interested in building as well.
But the prices are starting to decline overall.
The market is on BrickLink is quite saturated. Because there's so little barrier to entry, anybody with a tiny hobby shop can compete with the top sellers, especially on price.
So they use an algorithm when you're selling a particular set or your particular piece, a popular piece. What shows in the buy if there is such a thing as a buy box?
There isn't a buy box system, but there is a price guide that you can sort by price, and so you can see the cheapest ones available. And
is that what most people do?
A lot of people build wanted lists for the exact combination of parts they're looking for, and then they'll sort by shop which shop has the most of the stuff on their list. And then they'll delve into a shop. They can click a button to add all the items from their wanted list straight into their cart.
Oh, so and they can look efficient.
It over and review it. And then they can compare multiple stores that way and see what combination of different sellers can get them all the parts they need. Because with the large number of SKUs, there's just no way that any one store will always have everything. Hmm. You always have to place multiple orders to get what you're looking for.
And the more they can put in there is the more they'll get better shipping, right? You know, the more pieces in one, you're getting a better shipping rate.
Of course, yeah. If you order, you know, $5 worth of stuff from my store, you're going to pay $2 and something in shipping, which is a pretty high percentage of the total cost. But if you place a $100 order, the shipping may be like $5, and then it's a whole lot better deal.
Love it. Okay, so I think I beat the horse. I love it, and I think it's very cool. And I think the fact that you've been doing it for so long is very cool. So that's your business, correct?
Yes.
That's your business. But you have a partner, and you guys have an Amazon business. Is your whole Amazon business a combined business, or do you each have separate Amazon businesses and then a combined Amazon business?
I have a separate Brock's Bricks Amazon account that goes with my Brock's Bricks store on BrickLink.
Okay.
And then we're actually in my partnership with John, we actually sell through what his Amazon account that he had prior.
Okay. So he had an Amazon account. And if I remember correctly, when I interviewed Jonathan Cleeter, it was you guys met in a store and you were both looking at Legos. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? And you're like, hey, what are you doing?
Yep, exactly. Yeah. He was looking on his phone at eBay prices for a Lego set that I knew I wanted, and I was just pulling them off the shelf right in front of him as fast as I could before he grabbed more. And because I saw the two that he had in his cart and the ones I wanted. And so that's when he interjected and said, like, wait, what's going on here? We ended up splitting the sets.
You know, it's interesting. As I'm thinking about this, the tools for Amazon probably help you on BrickLink, right? There's a correlation in price between Amazon and BrickLink. I assume that you've probably figured out it's 80% of retail or something like that.
There really isn't a good correlation there. The demand is very different internationally versus domestically. Oh. And Amazon, for us at least, is all domestic.
Right, right. That would make sense. Okay. So... But you don't have a scraper that you can, or a scanner that you can use for BrickLink for part out value that you do for Amazon, or do you?
I can't scan, but I do have a web page where I can type in the set number to tell me.
And so it's fast. You can pull it up pretty quick.
What the part out is. Yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely a little bit slower than the Amazon scanning app, but.
But you're not out just going store to store. You have a plan, right? You're not just on a route just hitting these stores every day. I mean, do you?
I monitor online mostly to determine when sales are occurring, and then when I hear the right rumors going among the forums, I know that it's time to shop.
Okay. And so you and Jonathan partner up. And what was the thinking? Hey, because he was probably fascinated with your BrickLink store. Like, what is this, right? Did he think he was going to jump into that?
Well, we met in 2010, and so I was pretty fresh on BrickLink, but I told him about it, and then he opened a BrickLink store of his own. Eventually, he closed it down and sold me all of his parts. Because he was at that time of his life, it was not the right time for him to have a store. So that I was there to, you know, bail out and get a good deal on some parts. But anyway, he was doing research about how to make money, and he had gotten out of the Lego gig, and he was beating me over the head with Amazon. I was not on Amazon at the time, and he was like, this is where we need to be. Come on. And I was like, 15% in fees plus all these fulfillment costs and stuff? There's no way that this makes sense. I can make so much higher profit over here on BrickLink. And I ignored him, and he fought me really long and hard, and it was the biggest mistake of my life not to go right when he said it.
No kidding. Because you watched him cranking those, you know, you'd each buy 20 sets, he'd sell his 20 and you'd be like still sorting them, right? I mean, in theory,
exactly,
right? I mean, it's the truth.
Exactly. So anyway, he eventually got me on board. We went with some books initially, bought some used books at a bookstore, sent them to Amazon FBA, and 3/4 of them sold in the first month, and we quadrupled our money. And I was like, okay, John, you were right. I definitely should have considered this sooner. And so then we continued to just we'd shop together and then split the profits when stuff sold. And so we were kind of already operating a semi-business, but not in an official form and no employees. And just last year, we decided that we'd take this to a new scale. And so we rented an office space, we hired 4 employees, and we set up infrastructure to process larger bulk amounts of stuff. And that's where our new Amazon store is.
And how long have you been in partnership with him?
We partnered up in May of 2016.
Okay, so it's been a year and change. Maybe not quite. Yeah. How's that going?
Fantastically, and way above our expectations.
So how, you know, you're pretty independent. You had your own thing going for a while, right? It was your show. Probably worked a lot alone or whatever.
By that point, I had hired employees, and basically the entire process was automated on their end. I brought the sets to them. They took it from there. I didn't pull orders. I didn't fulfill anything.
Oh, wow.
I didn't do any sorting. All non-shopping aspects of the business were taken care of by employees.
And you figured out how to set all that up and how to manage employees and that. How did you do that? Because that's skills.
That was definitely a pivoting point in the business. I'd just gotten out of the sell just sets for a living by myself, which I could easily handle because it's just a lot fewer SKUs and a lot more dollar profit per sale. So I was actually doing some FBA and some FBM, merchant fulfilled sales through Amazon at that point. Anyway, so I pushed... I need to start over.
Okay.
I got out of sync there.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. So I mean, basically we were talking about is I'm trying to understand how you knew how to manage. I mean, to me, it sounds like you're really strong in the opera. I guess thinking about the fact that you can manage 5,000 SKUs tells me you're probably operationally very strong. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. Everything is a system and everything can be refined to improve systems. So I made a decision that I could not do it all myself. I said, I need, if I'm going to pursue this in a more full way, I'm going to need to pass off and trust my skill set in certain areas to other people and train them to do that task. And it was the scariest point in the business to release that because I had so much control of each of the aspects. I was entrusting my customers' satisfaction to other people that I wasn't in direct control of. And that was the hardest part. But once I did it and I found the right people, it has been the best change for my business.
It's a freeing, right? It's freeing. But how do you know how to, I mean, you trained these people, correct? I mean, you physically
Yes.
trained them. And I mean, that's just not an easy task to do, right? I mean, that takes some effort, right? To be able to do that.
I knew the processes so well that it was like, you know, just, this is how you do it. And I stepped in through the process. And when they had issues, we dug back to figure out why things were having issues and tried to tweak things to make it less likely to, you know, cause problems. And actually the last 2-3 employees that I've hired, I wasn't personally training them anymore. My manager does it now.
Nice. Well, it's a very impressive thing. I don't want to downplay it because clearly, A, operationally you're strong because to be able to set up those systems and keep those systems in place and all that kind of stuff is a big deal. And then 2, to be able to transfer those to other people, that is another set of skills that that's a very impressive. It's not as easy to be a manager as people think, or to lead in your case now, especially since you have a manager, to lead like that. That's a big deal. So you spend the majority of your time when you do, like you said, you go out and bulk purchases and buy. So when you make a determination, right? I mean, have you gotten out of that category of Lego? I mean, do you guys sell in all other categories?
Brock's Bricks is entirely Lego.
Right. No, I get that. So, I'm talking about you and your partner.
Oh, John and I have branched out to lots of different products.
Okay, so you're not limited. I mean, you're still, when you see Lego, you're making a decision, Brock's Bricks or partnership business, right?
I am.
Okay,
I'm,
that's the determination, and that makes sense.
At this point, if it's sold as a full set, it's sold through our new company, Supply Mode.
Okay, because you have enough inventory in the other thing. Okay, I buy that.
If it's parted, it goes to Brock's Bricks.
What percentage of your purchases now are Lego?
A very small percentage.
Really?
About 25%.
Wow. That's a big change for you. Do you see it do you see a point where you're going to head away from Lego, knowing what you know what's going on in the market and all the rest of that jazz? I mean, does that seem possible?
I don't see the parks being a business that deteriorates quickly. I believe it will have staying power. So It's because of the systems I've set in place and the fact that I'm not doing personally the hours necessary to keep it running, I have no reason to phase away from it.
As long as it's still profitable.
Yes, and it continues to be every year, and it grows every year as well.
Really? You know, I sit back and say to myself, okay, you've got a big overhead, right? You got a warehouse that you share. I'm sure you share the expense. You got staff. That's not cheap. You've got payroll, taxes, and all that kind of jazz, right? You got all those extra costs, and yet it's still profitable, and you're suggesting that it's growing year over year.
Yeah.
That's every impressive. Year. Even with buying fewer, we say that you're buying a smaller percentage of Legos of overall purchases.
The volume has gone up dramatically
right,
on the supply
right.
mode side.
Right, so you're still buying more Lego then.
Put it into scale, I've been consistently selling between $200,000 and $300,000 worth of Lego through Brock's Bricks each year.
Wow.
And versus this last year with Supply Mode, we hit just at $1 million from May through December.
And that's the company, your
partnership, yes.
Wow. Dude, you guys are killing it. I love it. I love what I'm really impressed with, other than the operational stuff, which excites me, and you guys can tell I get giddy over inventory and stuff like that. I do. But I also am impressed that you give up some control to Jonathan, right? Because there's a trust factor there, right? That's not easy to find. So let's talk about that partnership, because this is, I'm looking for the common traits that I've seen in other people. What would you say are the top two or three things that makes your partnership work so well?
Well, we've been able to delegate areas that we have strengths in. My analytical nature has definitely contributed to making smarter buying decisions on the Supply Mode side. John is a much more social, interactive person. He's the one finding out about the potential pitfalls in the Amazon marketplace. He's the one who recognized that we shouldn't be selling shoes with the lids ripped off. He's the one who was getting ungated in categories before we even knew we wanted to sell in those categories. So he's very much of a proactive idea man. He has grandiose ideas of how he wants to pursue various new things and always looking for change. And I'm the number cruncher balance to that, taking his grandiose plans and picking them apart a little bit to see what could be tweaked to more ideally improve that in that area. And it works.
So other people have probably said, hey, should I partner up with someone? How do you know it's the right time to partner with someone? Because you would, I would say you would suggest that you wouldn't be as far ahead as you are without that partnership. Is that fair?
Absolutely not. Yes.
Right. That's fair.
It has been a great result. I question more so of John and how much benefit he's getting from me being in the partnership. Because he had all these grandiose plans, he could have executed them with his own employees and pursued them quite as well. And the question is whether he could have done it as well without me there.
Right. Operationally, he might not be the strength. That might not be his bench strength, right? If he's a big thinker, typically big thinkers don't have the attention span to handle the operational side because it's complicated, right? There's lots of little details. Somebody's sweating those details.
And I think that's why it has worked out well. But I mean, I'm thankful for, I mean, he puts in way more hours than I do in this process, which is part of our arrangement. He's a single guy. I have a family with two kids. And I just could not dedicate the amount of time to balance his time out. And so the way we actually arranged it is a ownership share of 60% to 40%.
Right. He has 60, you have 40.
He has 60, I have 40. And I, because I had the Brock's Bricks side income, I wasn't as dependent on supply modes entirely for my livelihood.
You know, it's a mature thing to admit that you're only going to be giving 40% of the effort and he's going to be giving 60%. That's a mature thing to me, because most people would value themselves a lot more. Hey, it's 50-50 or nothing. It doesn't have to be, does it?
It was my first gut reaction, and I had to check it and realize that there was value in being 40% of something rather than skipping out altogether.
Right, 0% of... You know, or 100% of nothing, right? 40% of something, that's an old Shark Tank thing. 40% of something is a heck of a lot better than 100% of nothing. Sure. And as you found, that he brings value that you don't have to sweat those details, right? You're not sweating about worrying about cutting the lids off. You're saying, Jonathan, what can we do? And he's saying, this is what we can do. Okay, boom.
Exactly.
There's value in that, right? That's time. You bought yourself time by that.
And networking with people, knowing contacts and knowing how... You know, where to shop and when sales are happening, and these are all things that if you tried to scrounge up the information all on your own, you'd spend all your time doing it. And that's another one of his strengths, is that he has a network of people that are constantly trading information with him, so he has a lot more access to know where to roll into next week.
And in fairness, though, he puts himself out there. He helps a lot of other people, too. And so, hence the reason he gets a lot of access is because he puts it in. And I would give him credit with that.
It's definitely an information flow both directions, yes.
Yeah, that's cool. Okay, so advice for people. But let me just make sure I get this. Where are you going next? You know, we've already said that you don't see Brock's Bricks going anywhere because it's a great profitable business. It does. You said it's scaling up. Right, business is growing, so that means you're buying.
Yeah,
you're buying.
I'm buying
more.
A little bit more. The one thing that has changed there is that because of being on the Amazon marketplace, we now recognize demand for some parts there, and so we'll buy them on BrickLink and arbitrage them to Amazon.
So you can sell parts on Amazon and Lego parts.
Yes, mostly basic bricks, a lot of like 2x4 standard bricks are some of our best sellers. And that's where the customers are.
Okay.
There's a lot of people that have never heard of BrickLink, so they would get a much better deal if they bought it on BrickLink, but I've moved to the marketplace where they are.
And BrickLink, your sales are growing. Overall, is BrickLink growing with this guy who's really invested all that money into the...
It has.
Okay. And so it's getting more known, right? He's marketing it correctly or whatever?
I'm presuming so. I'm seeing the numbers in my store, and the numbers that they post publicly show dramatic growth year over year as well.
Hmm. I love it. You know, I hope people don't get too bored with me geeking out about the inventory stuff, but I think these niche sites is a big opportunity, clearly, for you to be able to sell multiple six figures every year consistently based on the processes and the efforts that you put in. And it's not been easy. I'm sure, you know, you're downplaying what it really took to get there. But that is a great, because if Amazon shuts you down, you're like, okay, we got Brock's Bricks, right?
Yep. That is the backup plan for Brock's Bricks.
That's awesome. I think it's great.
One side, not so much.
That's right. The shoes without the lid top, that's going to be a different issue. And so let me make sure I'm understanding. So you're able to sell, you're now starting to sell certain opportunities on Amazon. So sometimes now you're evaluating, hey, I can sell them for $1 on Brock's Bricks, but I can sell them for $3 on Amazon. Guess where they're going, right? And
exactly.
That's the kind of math.
That is one of the filters we do as we partner to set. We'll skim the stuff for Amazon that makes sense.
Have you found an inventory system that syncs up the two at all or no?
We do. It's called BrickSync.
BrickSync. All right. So we have BrickStock. Now we got BrickSync. And it ties your inventory from where?
It doesn't actually pull the... It ties between two brick sites that I use, which is BrickLink and BrickOwl. But we've kind of used it in a way that helps us with our Amazon inventory as well. They're all three the BrickLink and BrickOwl sites are completely synchronized. Our entire inventory is on both sites. And BrickSync allows that. When we get an order from either of the sites, it deducts it from both.
And what percentage sell on BrickLink versus a BrickOwl?
BrickOwl is probably 1/10 to 1/20.
Yeah, right. So they're a non, but you're like, hey, you might as well sell if something sells. It's the doesn't Bonanza hurt. Versus an eBay, right? Bonanza versus eBay or something like that, right? Hey, sure. You might as well take advantage of it. It doesn't cost you anything until it sells, right?
It's the same exact price as BrickLink.
Right, and you don't have a store cost to have a store.
No.
Right. And so why not put it there? There's no cost. If it sells, great. If not, okay, no worries.
The
okay.
cost was the time setting it up. That's
right.
pretty much it.
Right. Right. And if you can use the software that allows that to be done, it's relatively painless. But you found a hack.
Without that software, we would not have done it.
You found a hack to be able to compare Amazon in there too, is what you're basically saying, without telling us your trade little, secrets.
It's a little too manual to be a trade secret. But yeah, there's some spreadsheets and other things involved that that are required to analyze them and but they are separate inventories. The stuff that's been put on Amazon, it's stored in the same, you know, facility, but same indexing system.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Dude, I'm blown away. I think it's so cool. I think it's outside the box, and the fact that you're still doing it, even though you found the heroin of Amazon, how, you know, the addiction to it and the coolness of it, you're still putting your head down, doing the work. As you said, you put processes in place and you have people in place to do it, but it still takes management on your part. And you're smart enough to understand that that's not worth giving up because it's still a profitable business. I love it. I think it's great. And yep. I think it's so smart. I hope people get something from that.
Where we're heading is my goal is to replicate the process at Brock's Bricks with our Amazon store. I want to put people in place that do all the steps that we currently do on Amazon and be able to have the potential to walk away and continue to make money.
How far are you into that? You know, you've identified the process, as I assume, knowing the kind of, sounds like anal retentive, organizational person you are.
It is. I would say that the biggest challenge right now is convincing John that he wants to give up that power.
That's hard, right? I mean, you know,
it's his life right now.
Right.
And I understand that. It's what he pours his energy into. It's what he dreams of at night. It's what he lives. And I know that I'm not quite on that page just because I have other focuses in life. And so it's convincing him that it's worth for him to build those infrastructures and hire the right people so that he can go on and do something else and put his effort into another business for himself.
That's the challenge of a partnership, right? It's, and, you know, and there is a give and take, and sometimes you have to be the one to take, not give, right? You don't get a chance to, every great idea doesn't necessarily get accepted.
Sure. Yeah, we fight a lot. I will say that. We argue a lot.
Okay. And so how does that go?
Because
I just want to make sure to clarify this. Every relationship in everyone's life isn't perfect? Wait, you mean it's not perfect?
It's almost the basis of a relationship.
Yeah, really.
We go in with different ideas and we butt heads and we walk out the other end with more understanding of each other.
Right.
But we especially when we're shopping together, it's usually the worst time.
Well, you guys are past the dating stage. You've been in there. You guys are living together technically because you're in the same warehouse, right? So you're in that stage of your relationship, right? And so there are still arguments about that. Hey, you didn't put the cap on the toothpaste kind of stuff, right? That's what that, I mean, you know,
my wife does call him my work wife.
Well, it's true though. I mean, it's a good correlation. It's part of that immature relationship. It's not a mature relationship yet, right? It's an immature relationship. You're still figuring him out. He's still figuring you out. When you can start finishing each other's sentences, when you're an old married couple, then you know, right? And you know what not to say to push his buttons and vice versa. It's funny. You're in that living together stage. You have to quote that one for me to Jonathan. I love it. So you're hoping to go and expand there. And so are you still taking baby steps? Is that really where you're at?
Well, I we're expanding pretty rapidly, so I wouldn't even call them baby steps.
Well, I meant with the processing to get people to do it for you is where I was going with it.
Gotcha. Yes. well, we took a step in that direction.
Okay.
We've outsourced our prep to a prep service.
Okay. To the RA prep service in, is it that one or which one are you allowed to say?
I don't know.
Okay, well, that's fine. Don't worry about it. You don't have to.
But yes, we transport it to another city.
Okay.
And they process all the prepping. So we've taken that out of our office space that we previously did it in.
And that's probably lifted a burden off you guys, right?
A scheduling task that is no longer, it's now a question of is this product profitable with this fixed cost built into
right.
it.
But that's knowing that fixed cost, right, that really makes it a better and easier decision,
versus,
right? Because you can sit there and
say, do I have enough volume this coming week to keep my employees occupied? And now we have a little bit of flexibility on, we could have a ton of volume in 1 week and then be slow the next, and it's okay.
So you can make better buying decisions in theory.
Absolutely.
Love it. Love it. There's another pro tip. Your business was mature enough that you guys can then make that decision. Because when you're worried about other people's lives, it does change the decision. And so by now taking that emotion out of the decision, you're going to be a better business for it. There's no question. It's great.
Definitely.
Okay. So
yeah, we're able to take those same workers and apply them to tasks that we previously weren't doing, dealing with returns that we've gotten in. Responding to Amazon messages, stuff like that, that we previously had them prepping, so we were doing it ourselves.
Have you set up an eBay store or anything to handle some of these returns yet?
We haven't, but it is something on our agenda.
Yeah, it's probably coming, right, with the volume you're doing. Just a normal percentage rate would give you a huge volume. So, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, they're piling up.
I love the fact that your business is ebbing and flowing, but you're consistently, you still have that other channel that's giving you a nice steady basis, and then you can take some chances, take some risks, try some new things. To me, it's just a smart business, and I love it. I think it's a very, very cool to see, and I love the partnership, and I love the partnership isn't perfect, because guess what? There isn't one that's perfect. There isn't a marriage that's perfect, right? None of that stuff is perfect. There has to be this, you know, we're individuals, and so people are going to be different, and that's cool to hear, because when somebody tells me, oh, it's perfect, I'm always like, man, I don't know that I find that hard to believe, you know? So I think being real is very cool, and I appreciate that. So the goal of this podcast is to help people move forward, right? And it sounds like you guys have really done a great job with that. Give us a tip or trick that you think that we can help our listeners move forward right away. They can go back and put right into their business and get going.
This was a hard one. There is no shortcut.
It's 3 months of research, Steve. It's sorting bricks every hour of the night before I went to bed for a long, long period, right? I mean, it's fairness.
Exactly.
That's the pain.
So to be able to say this one little trick will get your business jump started, I would be disingenuous of me to say. I feel like no matter what route you take, there's going to be a lot of hard work in some way or another. And if it's easy and it doesn't require a lot of work, then it's going to not be profitable in a short order.
Right, because as you had pointed out, which was a great example, there's no barrier to entry, right? A very low barrier to entry.
Exactly. So I guess that would be my...
Oh, I like it. I think your advice is you got to put your head down and do the work. There's no way around it. You can't take the shortcut. Dude, I'm very impressed. I really appreciate where this went, because, again, I hope people understand that there are niche sites in a lot of different business. You know, I think of Posh and I think of some of the clothing world, but I can't think of the video game site. My older son was into it, where it had all the, you know, where you can sell that. But I know LP vinyls. There's just so many record sites out there and things like that. It is a very profitable route if you're willing to do the work. And it doesn't...
If you go into that kind of niche market, you are going to run into the collectors of that market, and they're going to be you'll require more attention to detail of your product. You really have to know your product. We don't know our products on Amazon. They're just widgets. So when we get questions about a specific product, most of the time we're Googling it to find out the answer. If I get a question about Lego, I know the answer to it. I can answer it right away. And the type of people that are buying on BrickLink are going to be more attuned to those details because that's their hobby, that's their interest. And the same thing is going to go with LPs or whatever other niche site that you end up selling on. You really have to know the product well.
Yeah, the other thing, I go back to the beginning of the interview. This is something that you're passionate about. And I think that it's really important to remember that, you know, if you're going to go in one of these niche sites, it probably makes sense. If you're trying to build a lifestyle business, it does help to have a passion about it. Because, it just makes it much more, you know, you're willing to get up even when you don't want to. Because, hey, I love Legos and I love helping this guy get his set and completing it. And I imagine he gets some pretty cool notes. I've been looking for this piece forever and blah, blah, blah. I'm sure that happens. Which is very cool. Dude, I really appreciate you taking the time. It's awesome. And man, I wish you nothing but success. Take care.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Are you looking for inventory this time of year? I have just the answer. It's called The List. Yep, that's it. The List. It's a premium sourcing service brought to you by Andy Slammons, where you get quality, actionable inventory from real sellers. These are million-dollar-plus sellers who bring you the finds in real time. Oh, and by the way, they're buying them themselves. Bring your business to the next level with The List. There are a few openings, but it's capped at 100, and they're so close, but you still can get in if you sign up now at thelistishere.com. Thelistishere.com. Oh, and make sure you tell Andy I sent you.
Thanks for listening to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.